To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus sealed the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another episode of the Chronicles of Aguna with me, your host, Harry Simeon. Hope you're all having a great Tuesday. The sun is shining here in London. I went to pick up my son from school this afternoon in a t-shirt. That is what I expect in May. Not this rain and wind and cold that we've had to deal with over the last few weeks. And I cannot tell you how much of a difference it makes to my mood. I'm in a bloody good mood today. I've been thinking loads about the weekend's game, and we'll preview that obviously at length a little bit later on in the week. But I'm just in such a good place with Arsenal right now that I just feel like, you know, we're moving forward every single year. There's confidence, there's belief, there's a togetherness, there's a unity. I feel invested. And yeah, I'm not going to say I'm resigned to finishing second, because you can't be when you're in it with a couple of games to go. But I've almost made my peace with the fact that whatever happens between now and the end of the season, there's been so many positives again to take away, that I'm not going to be happy if we don't win it, but I'm going to be able to kind of put my feet up in the summer knowing that we had a really, really good season, and I'll be excited for what's to come in the following campaign. Big hello to everybody joining us in the live chat. We've got loads and loads to get through on this episode. We're live at 5 UK time, but remember, if you are joining us from somewhere else in the world where the time doesn't quite work for you, you can go back on our YouTube channel and watch this, or you can listen to the audio as well, which is available on all your favorite podcast stores. Say a few hellos. I want to say a big thank you as well for all the really kind messages that I've been receiving throughout the day. We put out a channel / podcast, depending on what platform you listen to us from, update a little bit earlier on today about you know, where we're going with the show. Some big changes. The podcast is no longer going to be on the 90 Min Football Network. I'm going it alone, as they say, but we're still going to work really closely with 90 Min. There's still going to be plenty of collaboration, I'm sure. But I just wanted to let you guys know that that's what's happening. It means that I can do things a little bit differently. It means that I can dedicate a lot more time to this podcast without having other responsibilities. And that then maybe throwing the routine off a little bit. Look, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say that I'm going to be live at the same time every single day for the next year. Like, things come up, shit happens. That's the reality. And we will, of course, make every effort to stick with that time as much as possible. But from time to time, you will get a pre-recorded episode at that time, just so I can kind of keep that going. But you know, the nature of my job, it's just the way it is. It's very fluid. Things change sometimes at the last minute. And so I just want to manage expectations a little bit on that. Thank you to everybody who's come over to the Patreon page. You can sign up to the Patreon page for free, by the way, if you prefer to do that for now. See how it goes. The link is in the description below. If you go over to the Patreon page, you'll be able to see the stuff that I'm going to be posting there over the next few months. And as I mentioned on the update a little bit earlier on, everything that we do for patrons over the summer is going to be open to everybody. And then you can decide over a period of time whether or not you feel like you want to be subscribed to access that extra content. Or even if you just want to support the book, because there's so many of you that message me constantly and say, Harry, like, I just want to support the pod. And, you know, that's what I'm doing it for. And I really, really do appreciate that. And thank you all for your continued support. Let's say some hellos in the live chat. Who have we got with us this evening? We've got Crypto. We've got Afsa. Adair is with us. We got Gunner329, Chris, Rowan is with us, Steve, Sam, Roger, Stephen, Moss is with us, Prince Will. We got North London Forever, who says, Harry, please champion for Arsenal to buy Victor Gyökeres. He's a bargain at 85 million. And maybe we could do a part exchange involving Smith Rowe and Eddie. Imagine Victor Gyökeres and Timber next season. Prolific. And that is from Steve, AFC TV. So we're going to talk Victor Gyökeres because he's dropped a big hint about his future. We're also going to touch on Kai Havertz again because he's won an award, which is worth discussing. We're also going to do a little bit of Manchester United and David Moyes. Should they just hook up again? Probably makes a bit of sense, doesn't it? We're also going to take loads of your questions from the live chat as well. Really, really looking forward to getting into all of those. Let's begin then with the Victor Gyökeres chat. So why has this come to the fore again? Why is he a talking point again? I think at this point in the season, all the focus, particularly when you've got loads to play for, needs to be on the football. And I'm very reluctant to get sucked into the kind of world of transfer rumours and conversations and discussions this early on in the calendar. But when things like this happen, or when comments like this are made with regards to a player that you know your club are admiring, but you also know that a lot of the fans would be advocates for us signing him, then you've got to do it, haven't you? So we'll talk Victor Gyökeres. What exactly is the deal here? So Victor Gyökeres has been talking about his future. Now, of course, Sporting won the Primera Liga title again under Ruben Amorim. And there's a lot of noise around his future too. Although it seems like Ruben Amorim might well just stay at Sporting a little bit longer. We know that he went on a trip to meet West Ham United, which again, we'll touch on maybe a little bit later when we do this West Ham United section. It's not a West Ham podcast, but I think when there's big stories in the Premier League, we should touch on them. We should get into them. So Ruben Amorim's future was up in the air. Looks now like he might be staying put. But then given all of that and taking into consideration the fact that it was very public knowledge, you know, he spoke about it himself, that he went to meet West Ham United. Why wouldn't the players be looking at things in the same way? You know, it's not one rule for the manager and one rule for the players. It's got to be consistent across the board, right? So where I've struggled with this Gyökeres story a little bit is that I've read some comments earlier today online from people saying actually him suggesting or hinting that he might be off in the summer is actually bang out of order and it shouldn't happen, shouldn't be allowed to happen. And it should be, he should be punished as a result of that. But when your manager's been doing it, you don't really have a leg to stand on as a football club. If you're saying Ruben Amorim has done so many great things for Sporting that we'll kind of let him off the hook, even though we know he's been speaking to other clubs and we know that, you know, he's been going off and having those conversations. But we're going to come down on Victor Gyökeres, who didn't say anything anywhere near as clear as what Ruben Amorim was saying. So some of the reaction to these comments from Victor Gyökeres, I think, has been a little bit over the top. I'm going to read you what Victor Gyökeres said. And it's up to you guys to kind of tell me what you think about it. So the 25-year-old striker, who, of course, started playing his football. Bear with me. Hold on. I've got an ad coming up that I can't get rid of. What the hell is that? Never seen those on transfermarkt.com before. Hold on a second. Okay, that should be loading now. So Victor Gyökeres, who, of course, begun his career in Sweden, spent some time, obviously, in English football as well, had a brief period of time at Brighton, spent some time out on loan with Swansea City. But where he really kind of made his name was with Coventry City, where whom he joined from Brighton in July 2021. He joined them for 1.2 million euros, so less than £1 million. But he made a massive, massive impact at Coventry City and earned a 21 million euro move from Coventry City to Sporting. Now, that is quite the jump, right? To go from a championship side to one of the biggest sides in Portugal. And he's made an incredible impact there. If I look at what he's managed this season, this is in the Primeira Liga alone, so the Portuguese top flight alone. You're talking about someone that's managed 27 goals and 9 assists in 31 appearances. So he's participated in 39% of Sporting's goals. He's played 95% of their total minutes in the league, and he's been in the starting 11 94% of the time. The reason I talk about the amount of minutes and sort of the regularity with which he finds himself in the starting lineup is because I look at some of the other players that we've been linked with. Alexander Isak. I know a lot of people would love to see us get Alexander Isak. I know my good friend Tom Canton over at the Guna Talk TV thinks that he's the one, and you know, we should really be going out on a limb to try and bring him in, and that would be, you know, the best signing that we could possibly make this summer. The thing is, the big question mark around Alexander Isak is never going to be about his talent, because we all know that he's got that and we know that he's got bags of that. The question mark around Alexander Isak is always going to be around whether or not he can stay fit and whether or not he's worth a huge investment, given that his injury record is pretty patchy and that, you know, there's always a chance that he's going to pick up this type of muscle injury that we know has plagued him for a little while. The reason I highlighted how many minutes Victor Gyökeres has played and all the rest of it is because I don't think this is an issue that you would have with this guy. I think this is a player that is clearly very robust. To thrive in the championship, you need to be that first and foremost. And he's gone to Portugal, and physically, he's probably found it a lot easier. But the goals haven't dried up. He hasn't wilted under the weight of expectation at a bigger football club where there is an expectance that you're going to produce week in, week out. Instead, he's proven to people that he can make a step up. Now, the question is, can he make another step up to a club like Arsenal Football Club? Now, that remains to be seen. But the reason this story has come to the fore again today, I've digressed, I know, is because speaking to the outlet Ebola, this is what Victor Gyökeres had to say with regards to a question about his future. He said, "Stay next season. It's football. It's normal. I can't promise anything. I really like being here, but in football, everything happens very fast and we have to adapt. I can't make so many predictions. It's difficult. There's still games to play this season, and then we will see." So he's not shut the talk down. He's also not said, "I'm off." He's hinted at the possibility that he could move on. And he's almost, in my opinion, just stopped shy of issuing what they call in journalism a come and get me plea. He's not quite gone that far. He's not overstepped that line. He's not overstepped that mark, in my opinion. But he has made it clear, I think, that if the right offer comes in, he will consider it. And I'm sure that if somebody gets close to the 100 million euro release clause that Sporting have in his contract, they will consider it too. Now, often we hear of these big release clauses, and Alexander Isak, to go back to him, was an example of a player that had a huge, huge release clause during his time at Real Sociedad. It was around about 90 million euros from what I remember. And I always said to you guys that there was a good chance that you could land Alexander Isak for less than that. That was the kind of safety net for Real Sociedad. But if you went in with 65, 70 million, you probably do get the deal done. And that's around about what Newcastle went in with, around about £60 million, and they got the deal done. So if you convert the £60 million into euros, it's probably about 60, 66, 67 million euros. They were still a good 20, 23 million euros shy of the release clause. But sometimes these offers, they don't need to be as high as that. They just need to be respectable. The clubs put those release clauses in to protect themselves from people coming in, turning players' heads, and then trying to strike bargain deals. With a release clause like that, the selling club has all of the power. And so people will go on about this 100 million euro release clause that Victor Gyökeres has. I honestly believe going into the summer that you could get him for significantly less than that, as long as you make a serious offer and if you've got the buy-in from the player as well. This is why, you know, people on the continent bemoan the sort of growth of the Premier League and see sort of some of the things that have happened in recent years as being a little bit unfair, because what has happened is the chasm between Premier League football clubs, generally speaking, and a lot of the clubs on the continent, with the exception of a small group of them, is that the gap financially has widened over a long period of time, to the point now where if you're Sporting, you can put that release clause in. Who are you putting that release clause in for? You're only really putting it in for the Premier League clubs, because nobody else, with the exception of maybe Real Madrid, maybe Bayern Munich, maybe Paris Saint-Germain, can get anywhere near that money. So it's almost as if clubs are sort of setting themselves up to eventually get to a place when they have talent to be able to ship them over to the Premier League and try and make as much money on them as they possibly can. So Victor Gyökeres, will he be on the move in the summer? I think if someone makes the right offer, then there's a good chance. Will Arsenal be the ones to make that offer? I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because if you'd have asked me around December time what Arsenal's big priority was going into the summer, I'd have said to you that we need to go for a big money striker, a big old centre forward, someone who's got the technical attributes, someone who's got the physical attributes too. Sorry, I'm so amateur today. My phone's on loud, and yeah, you all heard my ringtone. What was the show from? What was the show called again? Oh my God, I've forgotten what it was called.
Oh,
that's terrible of me. Anyway, Succession. That's the one. My phone's always on silent. I forgot that was even my ringtone. But anyway, going back to what I was saying, if you'd have asked me what Arsenal's priority was, I'd have always said, yeah, striker. That's the position that we need to fill. That's what we need to do next. That's the next big signing that we make in terms of the project. However, the emergence of Kai Havertz has maybe changed my mind a little bit on this. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that Kai Havertz is the best centre forward in the world and that there's no reason whatsoever for Arsenal to be considering their options in that area of the park. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that he's shown that he can produce to a level, to a good level. I think this is a team that really, its kind of strength lies in its ability to spread goals around. There isn't one source alone. Yes, Bukayo Saka's leading the way on goals, but there are players that aren't a million miles behind him. Whereas when you look at like Tottenham over the years on with Harry Kane, there was always Harry Kane leading the way. Maybe Heung-min Son was not far behind him, but beyond that, there was a massive drop off. You look at Manchester City now, and you look at someone like Erling Haaland, who's always going to lead the way because they funnel a lot of their play through him, and a lot of their game plan is built upon feeding him. And we all know what a devastating finisher he can be. So, yeah, I mean, I don't look at this Arsenal team and think that the centre forward that we have has to be someone that gets 30, 40 goals. I think if it's someone that contributes a sort of decent amount themselves, but also facilitates others, I think that's a better fit in this current system and with what Mikel Arteta wants to do. Kai Havertz, who was named Arsenal's Player of the Month for April, has made me sort of rethink this. And I'm now wondering if we go bigger on another midfielder or we go bigger on another defensive player and just rely on the fact that between Havertz and Jesus, they can fill that position for us. You know, you could always use Leandro Trossard in that area as well. We talk a lot about what a great finisher he is. I'm just starting to wonder if maybe because Havertz is playing with loads of confidence, we should slightly pivot in terms of what our priorities are this summer. So that makes me have doubts about whether or not, you know, we would go and spend close to 100 million euros on a centre forward, full stop. But I also have some doubts about Victor Gyökeres. Now, I think he would be a good fit in theory. You look at players, you watch them as much as you can, you try and figure out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what parts of their game would probably fit in with what you have, and which parts of their game maybe don't quite fit in with your overall vision and maybe need adapting a little bit. And then the question comes of, is that player adaptable enough? Can they be molded into a player that works in our system? So I'm not really sure about the Victor Gyökeres thing, but he's clearly open to a move. I think Sporting would be more than willing to move him on if the right money was to come across the table. And having that 100 million euro release clause, I think, guarantees them that if you don't get there, you get near enough for them to be satisfied. And so they stand a great chance of cashing in big on the striker this summer. Also as well, you look at his age profile, 25 years old. It's pretty good. He's not too young in that you don't know what you're going to get from him and that you'd only be paying for potential. But he's also at an age where he's still got plenty left in the tank in terms of, you could even argue that his best years are still ahead of him. If you look at his record in the Europa League this year as well, 5 goals, 2 assists, so 7 direct goal contributions in 9 appearances, 3 goals in the Allianz Cup, and 6 goals and 4 assists in 5 appearances in the Taça de Portugal, which is another competition. So, yeah, he on paper and statistically, it looks great. Let me know your thoughts on Victor Gyökeres, and I'll take some of those right after this very short pause. Don't go anywhere. Okay, welcome back to the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast with me, your host, Harry Simeon. Just a quick reminder, if you haven't done so already, please do like the video if you're watching us on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel if you're watching us on YouTube. And if you're listening on audio, please subscribe to us on whichever is your preferred audio platform. Reviews as well, guys. They are massive in the podcast space and really, really help. I've set myself a target. By the end of the summer, I want us to try and get to 1,000 podcast reviews on Spotify, and I want us to get to 500 on Apple Podcasts. So if you could, please leave us a review. It literally takes 5 seconds. You don't even have to comment. You can just hit 5 stars, and I'll be delighted with that. So, any support there would be much, much appreciated. I've talked about on the podcast update today how else you can support me, but for me, likes and subscribers, it's not all about numbers, but they really bloody do help in this space. So if you could do that, I'd be very, very grateful. Okay, we've touched on Victor Gyökeres. We've talked Kai Havertz a little bit. I just want to talk, let me go to those comments. I almost forgot. I almost got carried away talking about other things. But let me see what you guys have been saying on the Victor Gyökeres stuff. Steve Stone says, our starting 11 is as good as anyone's, in my opinion, but our bench still needs work. Steven says, why not get them both if doable plays Jesus as Saka's backup and use Havertz as Odegaard backup and Zinny at the 8, Harry? The thing, this idea of Zinchenko playing at the 8, right? I don't actually, in theory, disagree with it because we know how comfortable he is on the ball and we know that he's played plenty of games in midfield, particularly at international level. But Mikel Arteta has never done this. Like he's just not interested in the idea of Zinchenko playing in midfield whatsoever. I know he does play in midfield when he plays, but obviously his default position and his position that he has to revert back into when we're not with the ball is in left back, in the left back area. So my point still stands, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I get it. In theory, it makes sense, but I just don't see it happening because Mikel has never really gone for that, has he? What else have we got? The lonesome Gunner says, we cannot afford to go down the road of we have Kai, so we don't need to buy a forward. He's done well, but he's not clinical enough. Also, if he doesn't play, his replacement isn't good enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't get a forward at all. What I was kind of getting at, and maybe I should have been clearer in my communication of this, is that I think we could go out and get a 30, 40 million pound centre forward that becomes a part of the rotation that brings us a very specific skill set that's maybe a little bit different to what we already have so that we can shake it up and we can vary things up when we need to. The point I was making is that now the position that you still want to go and drop Declan Rice levels of money on? Or do you go and look at that position and say, I can save a bit here, by doing something a bit different. Maybe I'm buying someone who's 70% of what I need, but then I use Kai Havertz and Gabriel Jesus to supplement the rest and sort of to be able to rotate, etc. I don't know. I understand why people feel that way. I just wonder if it's one where, all right, you don't stop prioritizing it, but maybe you sort of adjust how much you're willing to drop on that position in relation to maybe some of the other positions. Khalid says, I think Watkins has shown this season that he can play with the team and contribute in interplay. And the final third, I think Havertz has done really well, but he does miss a lot of chances. So Khalid suggesting that maybe Ollie Watkins could be the answer. This is the thing, mate. Like, look, I don't think Villa would sell because Villa are a very wealthy football club right now. They've got huge ambitions of their own. They're probably going to be in the Champions League next season, which reduces their need to bring in finance because obviously their books are going to look a lot healthier as a result of that. But if you're going to go and spend 100 million euros, so what's that, 85, 86 million pounds on Victor Gyökeres, why wouldn't you test Villa's resolve and try and potentially turn Ollie Watkins' head? Why wouldn't you try and test Newcastle's resolve for Alexander Isak and maybe try and turn his head as well? So do you see why I have reservations about Victor Gyökeres? It feels like you're going into crazy territory in terms of the cost. And I know that that's what the market demands nowadays. But if you're willing to spend it on him, why wouldn't you try first and foremost to maybe unsettle a couple of players in the division that we know can do it in this league? Damien Kelly, not happy with the mention of Ollie Watkins. Dominic says, as good as Kai has been in his role as a striker, it was clear in Arsenal's Champions League run that an out-and-out striker was what was lacking. Kai could still have his role and Gyökeres is versatile as well. Tom says, we need to buy a striker who can play wide as well, like Isak. Matthew says, spend all our money on Isak. Paul Abutu says, I'm not so keen on the signing of a striker, but I'm more keen on a specialist eight and a right winger who can compete with Saka. Our strength lies in sharing the goals. I think there is some validity to that point about sharing the goals. I really, really do. Okay, short pause. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other bits and pieces. We're going to touch on Manchester United. We're going to talk about an update from training today with regards to Takahiro Tomiyasu. And we'll maybe do a little bit of David Moyes as well. Get your questions in, your thoughts in to the live chat. I'll pick up as many of those as I possibly can. Yeah, short pause and we're back right after this.
You're listening to the Chronicles of a Gooner. Like and subscribe.
You heard the man. Like and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening on audio, wherever you're joining us from, like and subscribe. It really, really does help. Okay, so Arsenal took part in training today, obviously ahead of that game at Old Trafford this weekend. And it was reported that Takahiro Tomiyasu wasn't present in the training session. Now, it was said at the time that he might turn up later. And I don't know if that did or didn't happen. But it does ring alarm bells, doesn't it? Because this is a player that, you know, we've constantly had worries and concerns about in terms of his fitness. And when you hear things like he's not in a training session, it just kind of starts the stress all over again. Because I think him coming back in at left back has added that defensive solidity that maybe was starting to evade us just a little bit. I don't know. I don't know. I just think Tomiyasu is the most solid option that we have defensively, maybe barring Jurrien Timber, who we haven't seen any of really because of the injury problems that he's had. But to hear that he's not involved in training, you know, maybe there was a decision taken that he needed a massage or he needed some sort of physiotherapy or that he was better off doing gym work on this particular day. Maybe it's Arsenal being really kind of careful with him because they know that he's had a long list of problems in the past. And if that's the case, then yeah, okay. Like no big deal. But it is something that does set alarm bells ringing, isn't it, when you hear it. We also heard that Bukayo Saka was wearing some strapping on his leg. I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at one of the comments, which I'll get to in a minute. Bukayo Saka was wearing some strapping on his leg after sustaining quite a serious gash against Bournemouth, but he was okay to participate in training, which, of course, is good news. Some really nice comments coming through, guys. Thank you so much. Ogachukwu says, "Hi, Harry. I wish you success with your new endeavours. Keep up the good work. I love your work." Thank you so much, mate. Russ Morgan says, "All the best on going it alone, Harry. I wish you every success." Thank you so much. This was the comment that got me laughing. Gunner 329 followed up, but it was originally from Dale, who said, "What are the child labour laws in England? Listen, my son volunteered to do that. My son sometimes, and you'd never know it because he's become really good at sort of keeping it shut nowadays, but there's been times recently where he's wanted to where he sort of wanted to participate in the podcast, and it's like, how can I bring a five-year-old on a podcast? So I can't. But sometimes he sits at on the other side of this room and he just listens, and it's a bit like weird for me because I don't understand why he finds it interesting, but he does. And he wanted to have a go on the microphone, and so I said, "Okay, say this, and if you do it well, we can use it in the show." And he absolutely nailed it. So it was all voluntary. There was no child labor or anything like that. Aaron says forcefully volunteered. No comment. Okay, we got to talk a little bit about Manchester United, and I don't really want to go in too hard on Manchester United, to be honest with you, because we play them this weekend, and it would be so Manchester United to turn up for one night only, one afternoon only, next weekend, and scupper our title hopes. I think they've been a car crash all season. I think they've been rotten in so many ways. I think that tactically they're all over the place. I think that in terms of the commitment levels, it's clear that they're just not where they need to be. And I do wonder sometimes if the players are even half interested in sort of Erik ten Hag continuing, because if you watch some of the performances, it doesn't all feel like they've thrown in the towel for him and that they just want to see change and you know, that they're not responding to whatever he's doing. Obviously, I'd love him to stay there forever, but I don't think that's going to happen, because on Monday Night Football, away at Crystal Palace, they literally hit rock bottom. To lose 4-0 to Crystal Palace, albeit an improved Crystal Palace under Ole Glasner, I think is Manchester United really sort of hitting the sort of the rock bottom point, if that makes sense. It's not good for them. I think this was the game in which people stopped trying to defend Casemiro. And I know that he was playing out of position, but he was dreadful at centre back. And not because he was getting caught out of position in terms of, you know, maybe him not understanding where he needs to be or lacking pace because he's a player that's in the sort of twilight of his career, maybe. These were basic errors from someone who played defensive midfield in a Real Madrid side that won the Champions League five times. He should know better. And he was just way off the level. Andre Onana as well. He's probably going to have the game of his life now at the weekend, because I'm saying this. But he is so poor. Like, he is really, really poor, Andre Onana. So many shots, you know, sort of come his way. And I just think to myself, why haven't you saved that? And then he has the tendency to pull off a world-beating save. And you're sitting there thinking, well, how did you concede the one prior? I just can't get my head around him. He's a goalkeeper that he's just so unreliable. And I always think that in goalkeepers, reliability is everything. You know, it really, really is. But yeah, I'm well aware that they're probably going to turn into prime Barcelona on Sunday and cause us a problem. I almost feel like if we don't turn up and beat them now, we never bloody will. We haven't got a great record at Old Trafford. We'll explore all of that in a lot more detail later on in the week. But watching them last night, you're sitting there thinking, yeah, you know what? We could beat these even at their own place. But then you get this extra fear and anxiety that kicks in, because you think to yourself, what if we don't beat them? Can you imagine what the narrative is going to be if our title charge comes unstuck against a side that are as poor as them right now? They're really, really bad. But it's still not an opponent that you can take lightly, because as I've said before, about Manchester United on the 90 Min show and in various other places. Regardless of how inept they seem tactically, regardless of how disorganized they seem, they still do have a lot of match winners in the group. And that obviously could be a problem. Moving on, we're going to come back to some Arsenal-related stories in a minute. I'm going to talk Pedro Neto. I'm going to talk Gabriel Jesus before we dive into your questions. But we've got to address the David Moyes saga, if you like. It's been quite clear for a little while that a lot of West Ham supporters have wanted him gone. They're not satisfied with, you know, the style of football, I would say mainly. I think his league finishes have been okay. You know, they've had some great European campaigns as well. And this is a guy, remember, that won West Ham United their first trophy in, I think, 41 years or whatever it was. Something like that. So, you know, I think he's done a fantastic job overall. There's no doubt about that. But I'm also reluctant to kind of really go in on the West Ham fans and say, oh, they're disrespectful and, you know, they demand too much, when in actual fact, I have no idea what it's like to watch that football every single week. And if a set of supporters say that something's really bad, you probably should take their word for it. But yeah, when you zoom out, you wonder why everybody's been so desperate to get David Moyes out. What I thought was, I don't want to say poor or classless or anything like that, but I'll say far from ideal, is the fact that West Ham have been holding talks with other managers, Ruben Amorim, Julian Lopetegui, and these talks have come out in terms of being leaked in the media. And all the while, David Moyes has been saying, guys, I'm going to make my decision at the end of the season. We're going to sit down and talk at the end of the season. I think West Ham had to do a better job of protecting against that happening, out of respect for David Moyes, who has done a lot for that football club, not just in one spell, but in a couple of spells. So that's where I'd take a little bit of an issue with West Ham United. But look, the leak might not have come from them. And obviously they know that David Moyes was probably going to move on. There needs to be succession planning going on behind the scenes. So I'm not as angry at West Ham Football Club as a lot of people are, West Ham United, I should say. But I also think that they could have handled this a lot better. And I think actually they were forced into announcing yesterday that David Moyes is leaving because of these reports and because they were trying to save face, basically. But yeah, David Moyes is off. Julian Lopetegui is going to take over. Apparently rejected Bayern Munich. Imagine rejecting Bayern Munich to go and manage West Ham United. This, it just shows you the power of the Premier League, doesn't it? With all due respect to West Ham United. But a player that I do want to talk about that we've been linked with is Pedro Neto, another one whose name constantly comes up. According to David Ornstein, Arsenal are a bit concerned by his injury record, and that might put Arsenal off of going out and bringing Pedro Neto in, given what Wolves would likely be demanding for him as well. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one. I think a lot of Arsenal fans out there believe that he'd be a really good fit and a really good signing. Equally, there are a lot of us on the other side of the fence that think good player, talented player, but injuries are a big problem. And there's a lot of players that I feel like that about right now, which is why I think going into the summer, Mikel Arteta, Edu, and all the people working on recruitment have a really difficult task ahead of them. You always want to strengthen. You always want to build. You always want to make the group stronger. But there are so many players that I look at and think great fit, but then they have, like, I don't know what the right word is, like caveats next to their names in terms of why maybe they're not the right ones to go out and sign. I don't know. Let me know what you think. We've also heard that Palmeiras, according to a Brazilian outlet, are interested in taking Gabriel Jesus on loan. This made me laugh when I read this. On loan? Are you having a laugh? If he went on loan to Palmeiras, what would we gain out of that? Nothing. This isn't a young player that we're trying to get match time for, that we're trying to build up in terms of experience. And this isn't a player, I don't think, that we're trying to put in the shop window. And if we were going to loan him out to somebody, would we loan him to Palmeiras, or would we loan him to a club in Europe that has a better financial structure that would be able to cover the majority of, if not all of, his wages? We're not going to send him to Palmeiras and pay three quarters of his wages for Palmeiras to field him every week. Gabriel Jesus is one of those players, as we discussed last week, that falls into the category for me right now of someone I like, someone I would keep, but if the right money was offered, someone I'd also consider selling. A loan deal is not something I consider. I'm not even interested in that in the slightest, and I'm sure Arsenal wouldn't be either. So that is one of those reports that you can pick up and you can put it straight in the bin. In other news, we got to talk about the fact that Fulham's players have been pictured in training flying kites. Willian, Muniz and Pereira have all been flying kites on the training ground, showing that they're relaxed ahead of the Manchester City game this weekend, the game that a lot of us are hoping will be the one that City drop points in. Or is it further proof that they're on the beach and we've got no hope of them stopping City at the weekend? I don't know. Make of that what you will. I do want to spend some time now on you guys' questions. So please do get as many of those in the live chat as you possibly can. We'll do around 10 minutes or so of your questions. But just a quick reminder to leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. I'm going to check where we are. Where we are in terms of likes in just a second. Hold on. Let me just open the YouTube page on my second screen. Loading. Why is my internet so bloody slow today? Like I just upgraded my package as well the other day, even further than what it was initially. So I'm not happy about that. I can't see how many likes we got on the board. Why not? Hold on. No, it's not showing me. What's going on here? Analytics? I just can't see. Oh, 95. That's nowhere near good enough, guys. There's no reason why we shouldn't have a couple of hundred likes on the board at the absolute minimum, given how many of you are watching us live right now. Thank you for your support. But please like, subscribe. It really, really does help. Okay. Let's do the questions then. We've talked Gyökeres. We've talked Tomiyasu. We've talked Havertz. Moyes, Man United, Neto, Palmeiras wanting Gabriel Jesus. Just a quick reminder as well to go and check out the channel update, which you can find on the channel and the last pod on your feed, where I bring you guys an update about the podcast and the channel and where it's going moving forward. There is a link in the description of this episode, but also that update where you can go over to our Patreon channel. If you want to support, sign up. If you want to sign up for free, you can as well, because over the course of this summer, I'm going to be giving you loads of Patreon content for free to give you guys a taster of what's to come in 24, 25. And then if you want to join, by all means, go for it. But also, if you go onto that Patreon landing page, there is a link to a Discord server, which I'm opening up to you guys for you all to join. We can have conversations about Arsenal. You can have conversations amongst yourselves as well. We'll run polls. We'll ask questions. We'll share updates in there. And I know from speaking to some of you guys that sort of people from these Discord servers and sort of from this community have become really good friends and meet up often and stuff like that, which is amazing to hear, really. So do check it out. It is really worth your while. Okay, question time right after this. Okay, what have we got in the live chat box? Why is my laptop so slow today? What is going on? My chat box is frozen. Oh, no, it hasn't. Here, we're back. Okay. CEO Amaru says, Harry, is this West Ham fan TV? No, but I want to touch on the big stories in the Premier League. We've always done a bit of that here because I think some of them are too big to ignore. Gunner329 says, question, do you think Havertz can become more clinical? He's still relatively young and has great movement, which is half the battle. I'm not expecting him to become Haaland, but significant improvement. You want to see significant improvement? Yeah, look, I mean, I think with Kai Havertz, a lot of it is confidence. I really, really do believe that. I think we get or we see a lot of players like that in the modern game, players that when it's going their way, they seem unstoppable. But when it's not, they can kind of go into their shell a little bit. And I think a lot of that is down to personality. And listen, you can't change someone's personality. You can make them more resilient by sort of coaching them in the right way. And I think experiences and then the fact that maybe when they go through a dip, they're able to come out the other side, builds their own kind of resilience internally to, you know, bad patches and poor periods, etc., etc. Do I think Kai Havertz can get better? Yeah, because I think the confidence thing is the biggest thing with him. I don't think it's about technical ability, really. I think we can all agree that he's got that. And I think even prior to his signing, people were all saying, no, he's got that. Like, don't worry about that. It's whether he can impose himself and make himself stand out in our team. That was the question. And the other big question was, what position was he going to play in? Now, where you have to give Kai Havertz a lot of praise is that when he came into the side, he was asked initially to play in midfield. And I think that when Mikel Arteta brought him in, he brought him in with a view to utilising him both at centre forward, but also in that left eight position in certain games when that maybe felt like the right thing to do, where maybe we could get away with playing Rice or Partey as the lone six and being a little bit more forward thinking and front footed. The problem was, is that, you know, he ended up almost getting stuck in that position because of the problems that we had in midfield, i.e. Thomas Partey being unavailable. And then you got to the point where if you took Kai Havertz out of that midfield, left Declan Rice in there and played maybe, I don't know, Fabio Vieira or Emile Smith Rowe, you were taking a lot of physicality out of our midfield and you were then asking Declan Rice to produce and provide all of that whilst the likes of Vieira, who's a bit slight, Emile Smith Rowe, who has bulked up a bit but still isn't at the level where I'd call him physically imposing, you'd almost be putting Declan Rice in a much more difficult position. And I think a big part of the reason that Mikel Arteta persisted with Havertz in that left eight position, even when it wasn't working amazingly, now it wasn't bad, but it wasn't working amazingly. We were talking about how maybe we weren't creative enough with him in there, etc., etc. But I really do think the physical side of it was the big reason that Mikel Arteta persisted with that for as long as he did. And I've just brought up Kai Havertz's appearances in the Premier League this season for Arsenal. And if I count the first six, seven, they were all in midfield. He played against Manchester City at centre forward when he came on for 15 minutes. Then he went back into that midfield. Then he played every other time in midfield up until the 4th of February. Now, Kai Havertz had only scored four goals for Arsenal, one of them of which was that penalty that we gave him at Bournemouth to kind of get him off the mark. But he'd only scored four goals for Arsenal prior to that switch. And since that switch in February, where he's played predominantly at centre forward, he has dropped back into midfield on a few occasions. And when he's not started games, he's come on as a sub and played in the midfield. But he's then scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 goals. So he scored double the amount of goals since moving to centre forward. Makes sense, right? You move from centre midfield to centre forward, you're going to get more opportunities, you're going to get more goals. But I think the fact that it's double, given the freedom and license that he had to get forward even when he was playing as the left eight, shows quite clearly that Kai Havertz's best position is at centre forward. I think that Kai Havertz gives you stuff at centre forward that Gabriel Jesus can't. He gives you an option to go long because of his frame and his physical presence. As tenacious and as hardworking as Gabriel Jesus is, he doesn't give you that. The other thing with Kai Havertz is his work rate. It is incredible because there are not many players that can drop deep, can go left, can go right, can do all of the work outside of the penalty area, but can still find themselves or make sure that they get themselves into the six-yard box when it really matters, when the ball's going to come across and turning crosses the way he does. So I've been massively impressed with him. Is there room for improvement? Yes. But will Kai Havertz ever be clinical enough for people to kind of never bring up the topic or subject of maybe potentially bringing in another centre forward? I don't think he will be. But I think it's one of those situations where you know what you're getting and you've got to decide whether you prefer the benefits that he brings you off the ball and all the other stuff that he brings to the team, or if you would prefer someone who's maybe less involved in the game, generally speaking, but who's maybe a little bit more clinical in front of goal. If your wingers are clinical, like Saka, like Trossard, and both of them are, you would have to say, then you can get away with it. But will Kai Havertz ever be that clinical finisher? Not for me. But I now know what Kai Havertz is all about, and I don't judge him solely on that. I'll judge him on the other things that he brings to the team, and I think it's really important to do that. This is a good question. This is a life question from Ojadek. Harry, how do you make a two-month-old baby fall asleep? I'm losing my mind here. Mate, been there, done that. Normally pass them over to my wife was the answer for me. I feel like I'm really good with my kids now that they're like 2 and 5 and, you know, that they're a bit more like, they're like little human, they are human beings. They're like little adults now and you can have a conversation and they can tell you what they want and what they need. And you might not always be able to give it to them. But I find parenting much more easier now than at that stage where they just cry. And the only thing you can really do is either change their nappy or give them some milk. And if those two things don't work well, to be quite frank, you're screwed. What else have we got? Tebiola's asking if I was aware of the kite flying in the Fulham training today. Yeah, I was. Mario says, congrats for going solo, mate. I've done this for around 14 years and it was the best thing I've ever done. Scary at first, but so rewarding. Well done, H. Thank you so, so much, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Temi says, do you think strikers have declined over the years? Only Haaland is close to the old era of strikers like Inzaghi and co. I don't think they've declined generally. I think like we're just going through a bit of a dry patch in terms of like really out and out clinical center forwards. I think the more and more we see system managers flourishing, managers who are really meticulous, and sort of the less we see of the Carlo Ancelotti type, if you like, where it is kind of a bit like, this is our structure, but you know what? Go out there and do your thing. I think you see less of those players, those like maverick players that we grew up with, I guess, if you're of a certain age like myself. But yeah, I look around and I don't think there's a striker out there that I am 100% convinced on. Everyone I think about, like if we think about the names we've been linked with, Gyökeres, worried about the step up and the price. If I think about Alexander Isak, I'm not really worried about paying big money because he's great, but I'm worried about his fitness. If you talk about Benjamin Sesko, I'm worried about his ability to step up and maybe a lack of experience. So those are three names that we're constantly being sort of linked with. And I don't look at any of them and think I'm 100% convinced you are the one. And that's why I think Arsenal have such a difficult job. And that's why I kind of want to sit back a little bit and see what they as a club and as a recruitment team come up with over the summer. It might be someone or something completely left field, completely different to the names that we're talking about right now. So we'll see. We shall see. But yeah, is there a shortage of top strikers? Probably. Right now, I think there's a bit of a dry patch. But I don't think it's something that I would be like worried about. In terms of the overall state of the game, I just think we're going through a period like that. I mean, you look at England, for example, right? Just that's just to kind of zoom in on a small sort of sample size. You look at the England squad and you think, bloody hell, they've got so many great attackers. Saka, Foden, Grealish, Palmer, Kane, Watkins. You look at all that and you go, bloody hell, got some great players. And then you look at their back line and you've gone from sort of wealth up front to poverty at the back, because you're talking about Harry Maguire probably having to play. You're talking about problems at left back. At right back, they're pretty well stocked, but there's a load of players that can't stay fit in that position, which is a problem for Gareth Southgate. The point I'm trying to make, and the reason I used England as an example, is because I think that sometimes you can just go through periods of time where you're short of something because nothing's come through. And I think we're in a period in world football right now where there aren't that many clinical strikers. We've got Erling Haaland, Harry Kane, Kylian Mbappe. Robert Lewandowski's probably over the hill a little bit. In terms of out and out number nines, people will probably point at Niklas Füllkrug at Borussia Dortmund. But is he top elite level? Not in my opinion, but he is someone that is of that mold, I guess. So yeah, I just think we're in a position where that's the way it is. Nothing to worry about, nothing to stress about. But you also don't want to go and commit big funds and big amounts of money on players that you're not sure are the right players just because you want to bring in that profile of forward. And maybe if you hold fire a little bit and try. What on earth happened there? Even my camera's gone off. Oh, no. Hold on. Here we go. There we go. We're back. Sorry about that. No idea what happened there. Yeah, just all cut out. Bloody live streaming. But yeah, the point I was making was that if you can potentially deal with the issue at centre forward in a sort of in another way, i.e. get creative when you're thinking and maybe use two players instead of spending big on one, you know, that can sometimes make the difference, and that can buy you the time that you need to then make sure that when the right player comes along, you're in a position to be able to make that deal happen. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Afsar says, not paid the bills. Oh, bloody hell, bloody hell. Hacker says someone else had the same issues with the software today. Literally, it just went bang, and the page just refreshed all by itself, which signed me out or locked me out. Managed to get back in nice and quickly, at least. But thank you for your patience. Remember, check out the channel update. Like the video if you haven't done so already. Subscribe to the channel if you're brand spanking new. And I'll be back tomorrow with more on the Chronicles of a Gooner. Mike Stavrou's back tomorrow. He is joining me for a very special show. Can't wait for that. I'll catch you all soon. Until the next one, take care. Goodbye.